Welcome into Second Down right here on ESPN Radio. Christian Gokel alongside Cody Queen and Cam Urshery. Just getting a rousing bit of energy from Cody Queen before the
I'm
show
depressed.
Starts. Quote, I'm not feeling it today. That's what you want to hear, Cam, from your co-host as the intro music is playing. Cody, your Avalanche just took a big L last
three
night.
Three in a row, dude.
Like, you okay?
We didn't lose any games in the playoffs. And now we've lost three in a row, and we're on the verge of getting out of the – I can't do it, dude.
Listen.
My Broncos suck. Magic suck.
No, Teddy Bridgewater's doing it big time. You're going to get a new coach with the Magic. Things are coming up for you, man.
Yeah.
LSU's got a really good pair of DBs out there.
Yeah,
they You're do. One of those cross-country fans, but, you know.
On college football.
But, like, listen.
I just don't have a
no,
fan
No, you're literally
base
a cross-country fan. You're a Denver fan in the NFL, and you're an Orlando fan. In the NBA, you're a cross-country fan. So, listen, you're going to be okay. We're all struggling a little bit today.
I wish I was a Denver Nuggets fan.
The Hawks.
Nice.
Yeah, but you can't claim that now.
I can't.
You've been claiming the Magic for
too
long.
I don't like the Nuggets, though.
No. But, Cam, I tried to tell you guys yesterday, nobody wanted to listen to me, that the Hawks, it's just math, right? You beat a one seed in game one, you're going to get smoked in game two. Trae Young, he gets 20 points, but really inefficient. You get a big performance from Kevin Huerter. Doesn't really matter for anything. The Hawks get blown out in game two of the series. Come back home. I guess technically they did their jobs. You take one and you take home field advantage or home court advantage, excuse me, away from the 76ers. But, Cam, yesterday just felt like what every single Hawks fan was dreading, which is the fact that you have nothing for Joel Embiid. And when you let those perimeter guys start heating up, I think Seth Curry made his first 4 3-pointers. When you let those guys start heating up, the Hawks probably don't have any answers.
Yeah, they don't have any answer for Embiid. That's 39 game one, 40 game two. So he's averaging almost 40 a game, pretty much 40. Yeah, they were down two at halftime. I wouldn't say this is a horrible loss because, I mean, like you said, game one, they stole one on the road. Now you're coming to Atlanta. Generally, in my opinion, if you can get one in Atlanta and tie this 2-2, just make it interesting. But they clamped down. That's what Philly did. They're the number one seed for a reason. They clamped down last night and made it hard for Trae. And Trae doesn't get it going. Hawks not winning.
And I think Trae's going to have to realize, because we've spoken about this before, Cody, he's done a really good job this series taking what he can get, right? He's going to distribute the ball if he drives through the lane and they all crash down on him. He's got the floater going, and if they give him the shot, he's going to take a three-pointer. What I think he needs to realize is sometimes you have to be the guy. Like last night, he had 11 assists, which is great, but he only had 21 points. So, yeah, it's a double-double, but when he's the guy on the team that has to carry it, you have to take more shots than that. You have to be that guy. You can't just count on these other guys to start hitting the shots, because what happened in the second half is going to happen. Really more towards the end of the third quarter, where you go cold, your team goes cold, you're not there to pick it up, because he was on the bench at the end of the third getting some rest. You're not there to pick it up, and all of a sudden, I believe they go on a 30-9 run.
Yeah.
Like, it's the playoffs, man. Like, Trae Young's going to have to realize it's cool to make the quote-unquote right decision, right? Remember LeBron used to get crushed for this all the time, right? You're like, it's the right pass to make, right? You're driving down the lane, and you kick it out for the open three-pointer, right? It's in basketball, it's the right pass to make. To me, it's never going to be the right pass because you're LeBron James. You're the one who's supposed to take that shot. If you're Trae Young, you're the guy on the team. You're the one who is supposed to take the big shots, not be a role player distributing the rock. I mean, I could be wrong about this. I don't think I am. I think Trae Young, you're going to have to say – he's going to have to be the guy every single night if you're going to take down the 76ers.
Oh, no. With Trae, yes, he should have took more shots. He should have been doing more. But not only that, so they locked up Ben Simmons in the paint, like I've been asking them to do. But then they left Curry wide open. Oh, boy, got 21 points. He was draining them. So if you eliminate one guy, another guy on that team, that's the reason why they're a number one seed. You know what I mean? So, yeah. So Seth Curry was draining them, and then Embiid got like what? He got like 40 points. So they tried to play as much defense as they could, but you can tell they're only like 12th in the league at defense against one of the best teams on offense. So, yeah, Trae, he should have been doing more. He's been doing a lot during the playoffs.
Well, listen, he had Ben Simmons on
him. You can't let up. Yeah.
Yeah, he had Ben Simmons on him, who's all NBA first team defense. But at the same time, if you are the superstar, you're the guy taking a bow in Madison Square Garden, right?
Yeah.
You're supposed to be that guy, then you should be able to take on that guy. And listen, I'm not saying Trae Young had a bad game if you're just looking at the box score. I'm saying if you watch the game, I felt like he was giving up the ball way
too
much.
Sounds like you hate Trae Young.
No, yeah, right. I just, you know, I loathe Trae Young. No, I think Trae Young's great. I think he's going to be great, but I think you saw Doc Rivers, he's a great coach. He had a good game plan, which his game plan was basically like, listen, I have the Jalen Ramsey of defenders in the NBA. I can just lock him up on your best guy and then worry about it on the flip side. The thing I was kind of disappointed, Cam, and we talked about this yesterday, we've said it before, you do not have an answer, and you're not going to have an answer for Embiid, right? The Hawks just don't have anybody on their roster that can lock him up. There's no game plan that you can put together that's going to slow him down. He's going to get his. But as much as he got his, you still had a lead in the third quarter, right? What I thought they should do, what I still think they should do, is one-on-one with Embiid and Simmons, and then just don't let these perimeter players get the open threes. And that's where they were getting killed in the first half, and that's what happened in the end of the third quarter, into the fourth quarter, is you start letting these guys stay open on the perimeter, and there's nothing you can do about it when they start draining these threes because you're trying to trap Embiid on the inside, right? You're trying to double team him. You're trying to slow down Ben Simmons with two guys. You don't have enough bodies on the court to do all that and cover the wide open three pointers. I think you go into game three at home and you say, look, Capella, you got to start banging with Embiid, and you just got to, it's going to be him. We don't care if you give up 40, 45, and the same thing with whoever, if it's Bogdanovich, and if you put him on Ben Simmons. We're not worried if he scores 30, because that's 70 points. That's fine. We can live with that. What we don't want is the peripheral guys to start just pouring in shots.
No, I agree. Embiid, he's the best player on the court, best player in the series. You got to let him get what he wants. Regardless, if you double team him, he's still going to get 30, 40 points. So you might as well go one-on-one. Last night, Shake Milton, 14 points, 14 minutes, 4 or 5 from the three. That hurts. Like Seth Curry being like his brother, 5 or 6 from the three, that hurts. Stay attached to them like you did game one and say, okay, and beat one-on-one with Capella. Capella's going to get killed. We know this. But, I mean – That's what it really is. And Embiid kills anybody.
He's going to get killed. That's not disrespect to Clint Capella. Yeah, very few people in the league can slow down Joel Embiid.
Embiid is one of the most skilled big men of all time.
Cody, you would explode into dust if you stepped on the court.
My arms would fall off like a Lego character or something. He just like bum rushed me. I'd probably fall down
But again,
it's about adjustments, man.
Look, the Hawks, if you look at it from the macro point of view, they take one away from them. You get home court advantage back from the 76ers. But I think the fourth quarter of game one and then what you saw in game two, if I'm a Hawks fan, I'm a little bit worried about that. I know Matt Chernoff up on 680 The Fan in Atlanta saying, you know what, I still feel like Hawks in six. Matt, I respect you, dog. I don't know what I've seen from the past couple of games that would lead me to believe that. But good news is we had the Atlanta versus Philadelphia day yesterday. Atlanta versus Philadelphia, you took one out of two. The Braves get the big 9-5 win there over the Philadelphia Phillies. It got a little weird for a minute, and I kind of want to go through this a little bit. Drew Smyly, the narrative around him this season has become – after he goes through the lineup twice, get him out. It doesn't matter what inning it is. It doesn't matter how deep into the game you are in terms of pitch count. Once he's gone through the order twice, you've seen it all year, he starts giving up hits and he starts giving up runs. First two times through the order, great job. You only give up 2 runs, right? We can manage that. We can live with that. But for whatever reason, Brian Snitker wanted to allow his guy the shot in the fifth to go out there and be eligible for the win, right? You got to get through 5. Want to get his guy that shot, goes out there third time through the order, gives up a couple singles. Then all of a sudden the Phillies start scoring runs. They take the lead back away from you. I think going forward, you're either A, going to have to use Smyly and basically use him as a bullpen game and just say he's going to get us 4 or 5 innings, 5 innings max, or I mean 6 if he goes perfect, but 5 innings max, and then you go bullpen for the rest of that game, or you're going to have to start looking at Drew Smyly and saying, are you worth it? Because I know they gave him a whole lot of money, but you have guys like Tucker Davidson, who's going to get the start tonight. You have Bryce Wilson, who's done a serviceable job so
far.
My
boy!
Yeah, I mean, is Drew Smiley's 6-something ERA worth throwing him out there every fifth day? I'm not sure. Some other things to dive into from this game is just sticking with the pitching. I thought AJ Minter had a really good performance coming out of the bullpen, but we did get to see old Shane Green for the first time this season. Again, Braves did not re-sign him after last year. Got him back about a month ago, signed a one-year
deal
with
them. They're like,
psych. Yes, no, signed a one-year deal with them, and then last night did not go well for old Shane Green.
No.
He gives up 3 earned runs and just a third of an inning pitched. Not what you're looking for. I believe a 54 ERA right now for our good friend Shane Green. So the help you thought you were going to get, maybe, look, that's the first outing. But if that's any indication, it's pretty much how the Braves bullpen has gone all year. It's you got a lead, we're leaving you with a lead, and all of a sudden the lead's gone.
All year, dude. All year has been like this. I feel like it's just repeating ourselves over and over and over and over. Even at the beginning of last year, even the year before, I feel like it's the same thing over and over. Usually they do fix it after the All-Star break, but right now it's looking like literally the same old Braves team in the first half of the season. It's just the bullpen is just it'll give you gray hairs. And I have enough gray hairs on my face. And dude, it will give you some gray hairs. Hey, you young guns, both of you guys, Atlanta fans, gray hairs are coming quicker than my gray hairs. I can kind of see it on the side.
Yeah,
though,
you don't see any gray hair. That's just it's really, really blonde there. But Sean Newcomb gets the win for the Braves last night. He throws a scoreless seventh to earn that win. He's 2-0 on the season now. But the Braves used a big eighth inning, put 5 runs up on the board
to get
the win last night. I was actually talking to Kevin while that was happening. It was really
fun. We were playing video games. Yeah. Got a dub.
It was really fun to give Kevin the play-by-play while that was happening. That's right. But Ronald Acuna Jr. hits his major league lead tying 18th home run, currently tied with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. for that right now. Braves got another game coming up against the Phillies tonight. We will have pregame coverage starting for you just after 3 and out. Make sure you stick around at 4 o'clock on 3 and out. We'll catch up with Coastal Carolina head football coach Jamie Chadwell, the Chanticleers, Cody. Chanticleers.
If I didn't know their logo, I wouldn't even know what the heck that is. Not, dude. It's a chicken, right? A super rooster or whatever?
They're super roosters.
You know what technically was like a super rooster? A raptor, so just saying.
Yeah, I mean, that's a scary fighting chicken right there. But the Chanticleers head coach, you're going to join us coming up at 4 o'clock. They are the favorite right now to win the Sun Belt. You got Grayson McCall back at quarterback there. Isaiah Likely, one of the best tight ends in the country there, and a plethora of others. I'm always going to have a soft spot in my heart, and I know there's some Georgia Southern fans listening right now, and I apologize, but listen, when you hear the name, you're going to understand why. I got a soft spot in my heart for App State this year because they have a center named Bear Hunter.
Oh, that's the most redneck thing I think I've heard
in a
very long time. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Almost as good as Bumper Pool.
Almost.
Almost.
Almost as good as Bumper Pool. Or Cavassier Smoke is pretty
good.
Oh,
yeah, no, Cavassier, dude, Cavassier. Oh, good. Yeah, baby.
That's pretty good, too. But Bear Hunter with Av Stable. We'll catch up with Jamie Chadwell coming up at 4 o'clock there. But the NIL has gone all the way to Washington. Some Senate subcommittee hearings, going on right now in Washington. NCAA President Mark Emmert, along with a cast of others, presenting their thoughts and being deposed on what they think an NIL bill should look like from the federal level. We'll come back and discuss that next right here on Second Down. Christian Gokel, Cody Queen, and Cam Urshery here on Second Down. Glad you're hanging out with us on this Wednesday afternoon. Got Jamie Chadwell, head football coach of the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers, coming up at 4 o'clock. And we are, of course, presented to you by the Uniform Source, 2 different locations in Savannah to take care of all of your uniform needs. Now, guys, name, image, and likeness is something we've been discussing on the station a ton over the past few months as it's come to the forefront as states like Georgia are set to implement their own laws in regards to name, image, and likeness. July 1st for the state of Georgia, athletes, any public school in the state of Georgia will be able to profit off of their name, image, and likeness. Obviously, there's a lot of rules that go into that, but there has been a desperate push. Oh, go ahead, Cody.
I have a question.
Shoot.
Does that go for all cheerleaders? We do have a Georgia cheerleader.
We're just gonna bury
in the office.
Lead here.
Are they allowed to make money like that too?
Well, we're just gonna bury the lead here. Let's just completely take it in a different direction. Yes, in the studio with us right now, we have a new intern And yeah, I cheerleader.
It's not what I'm trying to get to. I'm asking if she's allowed to make money off of.
Well, I mean, if we're gonna talk about her while she's sitting here, we might as well let her talk. No, we have a Georgia cheerleader in here with this new ESPN Coastal intern making her radio debut here on ESPN Radio. Southern Britt, kind enough to be in studio with us today. I mean, I guess you kind of have to be. So I don't know if you're if it's kind enough for your internship. But yeah, go ahead, hop on the mic with us here,
guys. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So we were asking the question there, cheerleaders. Are they considered athletes at their schools? And yeah. I know there's two different kinds, right? You have, or probably more than that, but you have competition, and then you have the cheer squad. I don't know if that's the best way to put it. What are the? I'll let you talk because you're obviously way more knowledgeable about this than me.
Well, yeah, you hit it right on the head. You have competition cheerleading, and you have sideline. So spirit squad is what it's called. And while it may be a sport, while you're doing some athletic things, and while you probably have more injuries than most other sports, actually a recent NCAA report showed that cheerleaders had more injuries in 23 of the 24 considered sports for collegiate teams. But no, we're not considered athletes. So we don't get scholarships. But some people do have boosters and such. But yeah, no, we're not athletes here.
Yeah, just doing like triple backflips, but they're not considered athletes. But no, we've been discussing this, and the point of contention right now, as this congressional committee that got together, they've interviewed people from throughout, from media members to, again, NCAA President Mark Emmert, all were set to testify today, and they gave different perspectives, I guess. Mark Few gave his perspective, right? Which he did a complete 180 on name, image, and likeness because he was completely against it as of recently as 2019. But got together, got deposed. But the big one is Mark Emmert. And he wants really five things to come out of this. Number one, he wants name, image, and likeness. The NCAA wants it because they realize no matter what they want, it's coming. And so they want it to be controlled, because what you have right now is different states, different laws, different rules, different regulations, right? Like the state of Georgia, you have name, image, and likeness, and there's that weird rule in there where these schools can take to as much as 75% of what players earn off of that. Again, I don't want to get off on a different tangent. I don't want to get off on a different tangent. But I'm saying there's different rules in every single state. And so what the NCAA has been begging Congress for is, we want you just to pass a sweeping federal law that covers up all 50 states, right? We just want every single school to be covered by the same law. And some of the things they want inside of that is, they want that law to preempt any state law. So if you have any legislation, any bylaws inside of those that contradict what the federal law says, the federal law would then preempt that, and the NCAA could use that law to say you're breaking rules. That's another thing that they want in there. They want Title IX protections. So again, we've spoken about this. One of the big reasons why you don't see, if we're just using Georgia as an example, you don't see men's soccer or men's hockey as non-club sports, as actual scholarship sports, is because of Title IX. Then you would have to take that money, equally use it to build two more women's teams, right? And they want Title IX protection from that. And the one that a lot of people are pointing at and saying this is where it starts getting to the crux of our athletes, amateurs, is they want inside of the law there to be explicit language that says athletes are not employees. So we don't have to pay them, right? We don't have to, they can't unionize.
Just
right?
Make billions off them. Screw it.
Right. Well, I mean, and again, it's so complicated, right? Because the NCAA in and of itself, when you look at the University of Georgia, and the University of Georgia is bringing in, I believe, over $1 billion in a fiscal year, not just in sports, but just as an institution. That's not the NCAA. The NCAA is technically a nonprofit organization that comes together to proliferate college sports, pretty much every college sport except for FBS college football.
Yeah.
Every college sport except for FBS college football. Like if you talk about, we're talking to Kevin about this, when you say the NCAA college football championship, that's not the college football playoff. That's Division II. Is what we're talking about. Or FCS, excuse me, not Division II. FCS is what we're talking about there. That's the NCAA college football championships, where everyone says the perfect playoff, right? It's so much in this. But the goal of the day for the NCAA was, we want to push through a federal law, and we just want it to be about name, image, likeness. We don't want what a lot of these senators that were on this hearing are asking for, which is you should have money pooled together to take care of smaller schools. That's one bone of contention. Another one inside of that is they want these schools to provide health care for the student athletes after the athletes leave the schools.
Yes.
So, well, you say yes, but Cody, I'll ask you this. You're a member of the armed services. How big of a cluster bomb is the VA?
Yeah, it's not the best, yeah, but it's better than nothing.
And here's my other point about this is, and I'm not taking a side one way or the other, I'm just stating facts about it. The University of Georgia or University of Texas, Southern Cal, could they maybe afford, because you're not just talking about football here, you're talking about, if we are reading what these senators say correctly, you're not talking about football, you're talking about football, softball, volleyball, baseball, every single scholarship athlete that comes through and plays for your school, you're going to provide health care for them for the rest of their life. Maybe.
Well, not health care. It's so when it goes to the VA, it's service connected injuries.
Right. But
so, say if you tear your ACL, right, you will forever be taken care of.
Sure.
Tearing your ACL because you put your body on line for your school.
Even with that, big schools might be able to afford that forever.
You can get better care.
Big schools might be able to afford that forever. Lower level schools, there's no way in hell they can afford that. And so that's when, on the flip side of that, they're saying, okay, we want to pass this legislation where we're going to make these schools pay for the health care for their entire lives, for the rest of their lives. But if the smaller schools can't afford it, we want pooled money from every single school. You're nodding your head. I disagree with this. We want money from every single school to go up in a pot. Therefore, we can help the NCAA can then help those smaller schools by giving them grants and giving them money to pay for this. I think we're forgetting
take from the TV money.
No, I think we're. But again, these are all completely separate. We all throw these into one pot and say, just take the TV money. That's not the NCAA's money. When you say take the TV money, what TV money are you talking about? Because if you're talking about the millions of dollars the SEC makes every single year off of TV money, that's not the NCAA's money. That's the SEC's money. That's 14 schools that came together, formed a conglomerate, and sold their conglomerate's rights.
Okay.
And got money based.
See, I was not aware it went to SEC.
But so you have different. It's the difference between a federal law and a state law, right? It's the differences, right? So it's not NCAA money. That's the SEC's money. The schools in the SEC pay their dues every year.
Yeah.
To the SEC.
Like the mob boss. Or
to the NCAA.
It's like mob boss.
No, but you pay. I was talking to BJ about this. It's like paying taxes, right?
Yeah.
We pay taxes, so we have roads and we have firefighters and we have police officers that if I call 911, somebody answers. We pay taxes to be a member of society.
Yeah.
Right? These schools pay their dues to be a member of the NCAA because it's not just FBS football. The University of Georgia, Georgia Southern, they pay dues to the NCAA so softball can compete in NCAA events, right? That's why you pay your dues to the NCAA and you become an NCAA chartered school, right?
Yeah.
That's why you pay those dues. And so when people say just pay the TV money, what TV money?
No, you're right. I didn't know what the SEC, not the NCAA.
The biggest money maker for the NCAA every single year is the men's basketball tournament. And that's a huge amount of money.
Yeah.
But again, NCAA operates as a nonprofit. College athletic departments operate as nonprofits. Because they're taking that money and redistributing it out inside their schools.
What does the NCAA even do?
That's a hell of a question.
Right? I mean, one of my biggest questions for the NCAA with this name, image, and likeness is, okay, you get the money, then what?
I don't think they have a problem with name, image, and likeness. I think the NCAA, the reason they don't have a problem with it is because it's not taking any money away from the NCAA. Is if you played scholarship sports, so say you played softball and you went out and you were able to make money off of that and say, hey, I have 100,000 people following me on Instagram or something like that, I can make money therefore off of my name, image, and likeness. The rules inside of that, the only thing that's really blocking you from anything is you just can't say at the University of Georgia. You could be a softball player, you just can't use the school to make money, because that gets into a gray area of, are they then basically setting up payments for you through your name, image, and likeness? If this works out the way a lot of people are begging for it to work out, is the school and the player would have nothing to do with each other on name, image, and likeness. You would literally, because we were talking about this, people in college right now are so much better at social media and monetizing off that, or would be monetizing off of that, than 10, 15 years ago. There's just, you're right. So much more aware, and there's more algorithms and systems in place to monetize off of it.
Players have YouTube channels,
sure,
TikToks that are viral.
But they can't make money off of them right now. Whereas now you could. And it's just, there's a separation between the church and NCAA in that. All they're basically allowing you to do is you can go out there and make money off of who you are. You just can't say, you can say, I'm Jack Smith, quarterback at big school. You can't say that. You can't say, I'm Jack Smith, quarterback at big school. You can say, I'm Jack Smith.
Or can you say, I'm a collegiate quarterback? So you can't even bring up college.
You could be athlete, quarterback. But for the most part, it's, let's use somebody who's not in school anymore. Say Jake Fromm. How much money do you think Jake Fromm could have made just by saying, I'm Jake Fromm?
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't have to say, I'm Jake Fromm, quarterback at University of Georgia. He says, I'm Jake Fromm. Look, he would make a ton of money doing that, but they're like, well, what about the smaller kids? And again, now we're talking about name, image, and likeness and getting into the minutiae of that. The kids with less name recognition, they can still make money. And all this is doing is, it's not promising them that they can make money. It's just not blocking them.
It's giving them the opportunity.
And it's not even giving them the opportunity. It's just, we won't stand in your way.
Yep.
Right? It's just, it's not blocking. They're not, NCAA isn't giving these kids anything. They're just removing the walls that were there before. But where the minute, and this is every government bill ever, Cam, when I'm looking at this, right? It can't just be as simple as, let's get name, image, and likeness through and then worry about everything else. It's, hey, let's get name, image, and likeness through, but let's on the backside of that tack on four or five extra things. And then this is where this federal bill is going to get held up now for years to come, because you're going to have now Congress and Senate getting and wanting to get their thoughts and their opinions in and of this bill.
And I'm reading
from this. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, well, I was just saying to that point.
She said, oh.
All of a sudden, sorry, I didn't even hear that. I heard, like, athletes are going to start wanting to go to the schools where they can make the most money because of social media following.
Sure.
So they're going to start looking at these fellow players being like, I want to make money in college, so I'm going to go ahead and have a social media platform. But go ahead.
No, Cam, I was going to say, and just off of her point there, Mark Few, Gonzaga, said this. He said right now there is a recruiting advantage with schools that are in states that already have name, image, and likeness laws in place in the transfer portal, right? Gonzaga just lost a point guard, I believe, to the University of Georgia. Yep. So we went from a state without a name, image, and likeness law to a state with a name, image, and likeness law. So you know these coaches in states that don't have these laws in place are desperate for this as well, because they're potentially losing players because they're like, listen, coach, I appreciate you, but I want to go make money.
Yeah, it is a big advantage. And like I said, it's a huge headache. I think you should just pass a law everywhere. Let the kids make their money. It's gone on long enough. College athletes, they generate a lot of money. Even if it doesn't have to do anything with the school, if a guy can be at Savannah State, he sells his T-shirts or whatever, he signs T-shirts for $5. That's not hurting the university. He's making his own money. I don't get the issue and why this has been going on forever, but it's just a big headache in my opinion.
Because old people don't like fun, dude. That's why.
No, it's just
exactly what it
no,
is.
No, I mean, just say it is what
it's
it
been
is.
Like this forever. Why we don't like change?
No, it's not even change. It is change, but it's not that we don't like change. It's we don't like change when it involves our money.
No. We like change.
No. It's we don't
our
like
generation
change
likes change.
When it touches my money is where you don't like change. And NCAA, they've been making money for a long time. These colleges have been making money for a very long time, and you start getting nervous when all of a sudden there's talk about. Listen, what do you think they're more nervous about? The fact that a sophomore wide receiver can now go out and make $1,000 for an appearance at a club on a Friday night, which he probably should have like a room check because they got a game the next day. But like, you think they're more worried about that kid making $1,000 or the United States government mandating healthcare?
Oh yeah.
What do you think they're like? What do you think they're having nightmares
that
about?
That freaking healthcare. Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah.
Because again,
which you opened my eyes to that. Which you do this sometimes. That's not going to work.
It's
not going to work.
It's what it's going
to do. It's
going
to completely screw over the
what it's going to do is you're going to have, and this is just my opinion of this, and there are obviously way smarter people. Some people would argue not, but I believe there, and I hope, there are way smarter people than me in our United States government right now.
Oh, man, and here you are, really rolling the dice on that one.
Listen, I pray and I hope that is the case, but, and I hope they would come up with a better solution than we're mandating this, you guys figure it out, you guys pay for it, is what you would see if it came through. If it came that you have to pay for every single student athlete that comes through, even if it's what you said, even if it's only for injuries that occurred while you were a student athlete.
It would be great,
really,
but is it feasible?
Really where this started is obviously the brain injuries in football is where in the CTE, and a lot of this has started. I mean, you have huge settlements being paid out by the NFL right now. We really haven't heard about that inside of college football. But even if you did that, what you would see across the country, and I can promise you this, small schools would stop offering sports.
Oh, yeah.
Because as soon as it starts costing you money to operate it, which if you look across sports for the most part, I believe outside of LSU baseball, the only profitable sports were football.
Yep.
It's just, it's a huge moneymaker. But as soon as it starts costing a ton of money and then you have litigation and you're being sued for health care, you're going to see a ton of small schools start dropping sports. And
you'll start seeing JUCOs get rid of football.
Yeah.
Quick question.
Probably immediately. Yeah, and so you would either see sports gone completely or you would see them greatly reduced. Because, again, we were talking about Title IX. You would see them greatly reduced. And inside of that, what you would see is all of a sudden tens of thousands of scholarships for kids who had no other way to go to school would start drying up.
Oh, what was your question, Cam?
All right, quick question. It relates to college basketball. You said it's a money grabber. March Madness is a money grabber, right? Tournaments and everything. Okay, look at all the top recruits that are going to the G League now to make 500K. So how is college basketball going to combat that? How are you going to battle that now? They're getting 500K to play 20 games and then go to the league. How are you going to battle that? How are you going to go against that? That's the issue I have. That's what I'm trying to get the answer of. Because that's a lot of money. That's where I think
name, image, and likeness is going to come into play a lot. Where I think if you have a top recruit coming out like a Zion Williamson and he comes out, you know he could have walked out of high school with a contract by Nike or Adidas, whoever he wanted to, right? Like he could have walked out of high school, gone to Duke with a name, image, and likeness contract. Now where it's going to get sketchy, and again, this is getting really into the minutia of it, where it's going to get sketchy is you go to a Nike school and you got an Adidas contract. Like is that?
Are we going to start seeing
randomized shoes in NCAA basketball? I don't know. Or is it just, listen, I wear Adidas on days off and I wear Nikes on game day. That's what I got to do. It's the minutia. It's the landscape is changing. But I think the crux of the argument right now is the NCAA wants name, image, and likeness. And they want a federal bill that grants players the ability to make money off of their name, image, and likeness. The problem we're running into right now, and some people will argue it's not a problem, but the conundrum, I guess is the best way to put it, that we're running into right now is the fact that, like any other bill, people are going to want to see things tacked onto this bill to push it through because it is such a hot stove argument and subject that people want to rush through. Listen, universal health care for student athletes provided by the schools is going to be really hard to pallet for a lot of schools. But if they tack that onto the name, image, and likeness thing, maybe they feel like they can push it through. I think you'd see a lot of unintended consequences from that where you reduce opportunities. We'll have to wait and see. Those hearings just wrapping up. Amazing job by Ross Dellinger of SI.com keeping us up to date with that. We'll talk about it more coming up on 3 and Out. Got to take a quick break. We'll come back with more right here on ESPN Radio. We'll be curious to get your opinion on this. Again, joined by a new ESPN Coastal intern, Southern Britt. And Cam, I'm curious yours as well, more from the basketball side. But there's been some questions. Obviously, things changed a lot last year, and we're forced to change, right? If we were going to operate, we had to change how we operate. I mean, we've done shows where all three of us were in different locations, right? 3 and Out, we've only done two or three shows where everybody's been in the same building in over a year and a half.
Yeah.
Almost coming up now. So things had to change this past year to be able to operate. But now as we slowly get back to normal, there are some things that I think are lingering. And one of them is play-by-play. And there's a lot of fans that are upset because in some of the bigger college baseball regional games, ESPN decided that they were just going to have their play-by-play guys do the calls from their house on monitors. And, I mean, we saw Kirk Herbstreit have to do that during the college football season because he tested positive for COVID-19. Is Cam, I'll start with you. Do you think that's feasible doing it that way in the future? Because in my opinion, I think if you are the play-by-play and you're the color of games like this, you need to be in stadium.
No, I don't think it's feasible, and I agree with you. If you're play-by-play, you need to be there in the atmosphere, getting the same treatment that the fans are getting. We want it live. I don't think you can get it live necessarily through TV like they can in actual face-to-face. Sure. So, yeah, I do agree with you.
And Southern, we were talking about this earlier. It's not just game day that they're there, right? Like when you see Gary Danielson and Brad Nessler on CBS, they're not just showing up to Jordan-Hare on Saturday. They've spent 3-4 days with these coaches, sitting down, talking to them. This is where they get the background with them. And obviously you can do all of that virtually now. Like, right, we can hop on a Zoom call, but I just don't feel like you're going to have the same level of what you have when you have that in-person conversation and then you have the in-person in-stadium feel. Because what's a broadcast? A broadcast is you're supposed to be bringing what's happening in that stadium to me in my house.
Right. No, you said exactly what I was going to hit on. The play-by-play and the color, you're supposed to tell the audience at home what you're seeing when you're in the atmosphere at the stadium. And you're supposed to give them the insider info that they wouldn't know watching on the television. So how would you know that if you're also watching it on the television with the audience at home? It makes no sense to me. I get it why other sports broadcasting networks want to do it. They want to save money, save time, maybe use their broadcasters across different games, not have to fly them everywhere. I get it. But when you're talking about the quality of a broadcast, it just doesn't add up.
And Cody, it's always the argument with the bureaucracy, right? You're going to have people who are inside of these companies who could care less about sports. Like, yeah, they literally, their job is accounting, and they look. It's the reason Dan Le Batard isn't at ESPN anymore, is they fired Chris Cody, who is a huge part of that show, just due to a clerical thing. They looked down, they said, producer, we got to cut these guys. All right, let's cut this guy. And it's because they just didn't know. They didn't pay attention, right? It's you have to be involved with the sports to understand how it works. And when they say, oh, we just saved X amount of money by not sending Kirk Herbstreit and Chris Fowler to these games, why don't we just do that all the time, just have them do it from their houses? It's one of those things where you have to, I believe, spend money. And it's not a lot of money compared to how much money they're making off of these and how much they're spending to broadcast them. Like with the NFL, how much that's going to start costing in the SEC. It's not a lot of money in comparison to send these people and pay for hotel, food, and travel. It's not a lot of money, but I think it's something where it could become detrimental to the point where people say your broadcast isn't as good.
Well, you get a better broadcast when you have more of a personal connection. You know, you've called games. You're going to be doing more games, especially with BC this year. And you have more of a personal connection when you're there with the coach. You're there. You're seeing his body language, doing all this. Someone's just sitting in front of the screen and you're just looking at him. It's not very personal. Sports is very a personal thing, trying to get in-person type of thing. That's why everybody wanted fans back. Also, announcers back. It's equally having everybody back in the building and having a – it's fun. Sports are fun.
It was
you got to have everybody there.
It was eerie listening to the radio calls, especially early in Major League Baseball last year, because you'd just be listening to Ben Ingram and he would call a home run and you just heard nothing.
Yep.
After he called it. Like it was eerie doing that. And a lot of times, and they're still doing this, they're calling away games from Truist Park. And so they're watching on a monitor having to call these games and – They're missing a lot of things. So it's going to be something interesting to see. I want to get Kevin's opinion on it. We'll talk about this more on 3 and Out, but really something we're going to see maybe change in sports. Hopefully we don't see the change. We can get back to normal a little bit there. Got to take a quick break, though. We'll come back. Final segment of Second Down next. Welcome back into Second Down right here on ESPN Radio. Christian Gokel alongside Cody Queen, Cam Urshery, and joined in studio by a new ESPN Coastal intern, Southern Britt here. Cam, I haven't said it all day, but you know what? I've seen Friday Night Lights too many times. And my old coach Gary Gaines told me, ain't no such thing as curses. Braves are 500. They have a shot tonight to be over 500 for the first time all year. Ain't no such thing as curses, Cam. They're getting it done tonight.
I thought you was going to go by the show and not say anything. Now you have jinxed them. Oh, man.
Wait, did they lose?
Every time. They won yesterday.
Lose? Well, they lost against Dallas Carter in the championship.
Yeah, but I mean, that's not because they were cursed. It's because the Dallas Carter was cheating, remember?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
You know, there's kicking helmets
every
and stuff
every time
in their
we
face.
Do this, they lose, man. Every time we do this, they lose. But, you know, I hope it changes tonight. We've been waiting all year. It's been 58 games. Maybe the 59th is all.
No, he thinks it's funny. He
Southern,
thinks
15
it's funny.
Seconds. Are there any such thing as curses in sports?
No.
No. Perfect. See, that's professional right there. One word, no. Ain't no curses. Brave's going to get it done tonight. We'll have the call of the game coming up for you just after 3 and out. Of course, Brave's pregame coverage starts right after the guys get off at 6 o'clock. But Jamie Chadwell, head football coach at Coastal Carolina, coming up on 3 and out.